What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Welcome back to part three, the final part of Ivan Milat. I promise I will not get to the end of this and say, there's another part.
Part five, part seven.
Anymore, Ivan Milat.
Yeah.
This one took a lot out of me to put together this part because it was basically talking about lots of unsolved.
Yeah.
Cases, either disappearances or murders, and just there not being any answers. So it was rough researching it and just seeing over and over again, like, not solved, not solved, not solved. So
yeah,
I am very ready to share this with you, get this information out, and then not think of Ivan Milat again.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan because it's pretty heavy stuff.
It is. So if you haven't listened to parts one and two, go listen to those because you will be confused otherwise. But this is part three of Ivan Milat, a.k.a. the man convicted of murdering seven backpackers in Australia in the late 1980s and early 90s. And in this part, we are going to be talking about other cases that Milat is potentially connected to. In 1996, Milat was convicted of the murders of Joanne Walters, Caroline Clark, Deborah Everest, James Gibson, Simone Schmidl, Gabor Neubauer, and Anja Hopschied. He was also convicted of the attempted murder, robbery, and false imprisonment of Paul Onions, who is the man who came forward and kind of, like, because of his account,
blew the case.
Yeah, open. Cracked the case wide open and got Milat.
Yeah.
Milat was sentenced to seven life sentences without the possibility of parole, plus another 18 years. So he was never going to get out of prison. While Milat was only convicted of and officially connected to seven murders, though, it's believed he committed many more. After his capture, 58 unsolved deaths and disappearance cases were officially reviewed by Task Force AIR, which was the task force that caught Milat, for his potential involvement. And it's believed that he may be involved in many of them. And this is only the ones that were, like, officially reviewed at the time by Task Force AIR. There are many others that investigators, private investigators, like retired detectives, all kinds of people have tried to connect,
like, official people.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's kind of hard to connect cases to Milat, though, because he didn't really have an MO. So yeah. His victims, the main similarities was that they were young hitchhikers and that they were all found in, like, shallow graves ish.
Yeah,
but that's kind of where the similarities between the victims end.
Yeah, that's the scary part, is, like, they're, like, male, female, like, different races, like,
killed in different ways,
killed in different manners.
I feel like we brought this up in part one. Maybe it was just you and me talking, Andrea. I don't remember, but it reminds me of Israel Keyes.
Yeah,
because there was no rhyme or reason. I think you did. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. And this one, Milat is a little bit more specific because all of his known victims were, like, either backpackers or hitchhikers, like people traveling around. And there were multiple causes, or there were multiple people with the same cause of death, but there were, like, multiple causes of death.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are some similarities. It's a little bit more, quote unquote, cohesive than structured than Israel Keyes. But there's also a lot of differences. So that's why there is so much speculation about so many cases being connected to him. But none are really confirmed at all. And as we talked about in part two, Milat didn't confess to anything, not even the murders he was convicted of.
So frustrating.
Yeah. So first, let's talk about why investigators believe Milat committed other murders. So he was 45 years old when the first murder he was convicted of was committed in 1989. And it is unusual for a serial killer to start killing that late in life. So yeah. Experts believe that that in and of itself indicates that he likely killed before.
Yeah. And he had a very tumultuous
childhood
background. Yeah. Everything, his childhood, like his teenage years, like he was doing some things that were against the law, maybe not murder, but still.
Right. And speaking of that, we know that in 1971, he was acquitted on charges of kidnapping and rape of two women. So we discussed this in part one, but basically a large part of why he was acquitted was because he went on the run for over 2 years after he was being investigated for that crime. So he wasn't technically like arrested on that crime yet. He basically caught wind that he was kind of being investigated, so he went on the run. By the time they captured him and actually charged him and he went to trial, the victims were kind of having trouble being able to testify against him because it had been so long.
Yeah.
So technically he was acquitted, but it was very clear in the investigation that he was responsible for that crime.
Right.
And that took place 18 years before his first confirmed murder. So the likelihood that he didn't at least abduct other victims in that 18 years is very low. And he likely killed before.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that just seems so unlikely to just pick up such a horrible trait, like in your, you said, 50s? Or 40s.
He was 45. Yeah.
Yeah, mid-40s. Like, nah, he was doing something in between those two time
periods.
And
we know that killers escalate. So, you know, as a teen, he started robbery, theft. Then it went up to assault, physical assault, sexual assault, kidnapping, abduction, murder. And there's no way there was 18 years between that abduction he was acquitted of and the first murder.
Absolutely not.
But I'm guessing I don't have to convince you guys that he committed more murders. Like, I think we all...
we're all on the same page.
Yeah, can agree on that. So let's dive into some of the disappearances and deaths that he is believed to be connected to. And just so you know, like, from now, there is no definitive answer in any of these. So it's frustrating. It's heartbreaking for the victims' families because they just don't have answers. But... there are several. And first, we're going to discuss the three cases that most people do believe for sure Ivan Milat is a very good suspect in. Also, just as a side note, I'm going to post a map showing where these victims were like either last seen or found murdered in reference or in comparison to the Bolongalo State Forest where the seven victims were found. I'm not from Australia. I know we have a lot of Australian listeners, but also listeners not from Australia. And it can be kind of confusing if you don't know, like, the landscape. So I'll map it out for you guys so you can kind of see, like, where things are in comparison. And I'll post that on our Instagram and Facebook for you guys to see while you're listening.
Okay.
Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode. So first up is Karen Rowland. On February 26, 1971, 20-year-old Karen Rowland was traveling to meet her sister at a hotel in Canberra. And she was driving herself there, as was her sister, and they were going to meet at the hotel. But she never showed up. This was immediately concerning to her family because Karen was 5 months pregnant.
No. Don't tell me that.
I know. That evening, Karen's abandoned car was found abandoned, out of gas, and no sign of Karen was anywhere.
Out of gas.
And she remained missing for the next 3 months when, unfortunately, she was found murdered. On May 13th, 1971, Karen's body was found in a pine plantation near the Air Disaster Memorial in Canberra, which is southwest of Bolonglo. She was found covered in pine needles, and her belongings were strewn in a line from her body, indicating that she was dragged to the, like, quote-unquote grave that she was buried in, because they were basically found in, like, a line. And that's actually how she was found. The person that found her saw her belongings and, like, followed this track of, like, clothes, her purse, things, and then found her. Her arms were found still above her head as if she had been dragged. Karen's official cause of death has never been ruled, but it is believed she was strangled due to the breaking of her hyoid bone, which is in your neck. And that's like what indicates strangulation. Now, the main reason why Ivan Milat is linked to Karen's murder is because the day after she disappeared, he showed up at work in Liverpool and claimed that he had murdered someone and buried the body the night before.
What the hell?
There were no other disappearances in the area at the time that lined up, and so Karen's made the most sense. We know that Milat at the time was working at the Department of Main Roads, and as part of that job, he frequently drove between Liverpool and Canberra in the direction Karen was going. One witness saw Karen pull over when her car ran out of gas and saw a person pull up beside her in a gold-colored car. And at the time, it's believed that Milat was driving a gold Ford Fairmont. Steve Rowland, who was just 16 years old when his sister disappeared, believes that a stranger abducted her because he said she was trusting and likely would have gone with somebody offering to help her. There have been 30 persons of interest identified in Karen's disappearance, including Ivan Milat. Also, it was a different disposal ground, but it was a similar type of area. And because this was 18 years before Milat's first known victim, it's very possible that he was using a different disposal ground at the time.
Yeah. And it was like probably a crime of opportunity. So he may have just disposed of her body like the nearest location he knew that was desolate and, you know, and he could get away with it easier.
Exactly. In 2022, a retired detective in the UK whose wife is Karen's cousin, a man named Hugh Hughes, which is just the coolest name.
Stop.
I know. He was investigating Karen's death and Milat's potential involvement. And specifically, he was trying to find out more information about the car that Milat was believed to be driving at the time, that gold Ford.
Yeah.
He worked with police who investigated Karen's case, and through his investigation, he believes that Milat is a very viable suspect, especially because Karen's death was just 6 weeks after the 1971 kidnapping and rape that Milat was acquitted of. So it's very possible that, you know, that one failed. He maybe had wanted to murder those two women. And if you remember from part one, they basically bravely escaped when he pulled over to get them a soda. And so had they not done that, they might have been victims of his, or, you know, murder victims of his. And then 6 weeks later, he's frustrated that he didn't murder those women, and so he murders Karen.
And I assume that unfortunately, when Karen was found, she was like, her remains were probably skeletal remains, so there's no way to tell if she had been sexually assaulted.
Correct.
Damn.
Additionally, Karen's body was covered in pine needles in a shallow grave, and Malat's other victims were found in shallow graves covered in like leaves and branches. And this will be a recurring theme of why several cases are connected to him. Additionally, it is believed that Malat spent time at the crime scenes after the murders, and I hate to even say it like this, but enjoying himself, because he sat there drinking, smoking cigarettes. There were cigarette butts found, beer bottles with bullet holes as if he was using them for target practice.
Right.
And at Karen's crime scene, not far from her body, there were empty beer bottles. Over 50 years later, Karen's case remains unsolved today. And unfortunately, if Malat was responsible for her death, it's unlikely her family will ever get answers, because he never confessed. He's dead now. Unless there's like some sort of DNA evidence that one day is able to be tested and linked to him, it's unlikely that he'll ever be connected.
That's so sad. And like, I mean, it's been 50 years, so chances are like most of her family has probably passed on too. So that is just so sad. Like the whole thing is just so heartbreaking.
I know. That's what I was saying. Like this entire part three just was like shattering me, because it's just that over and over again.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still important for these victims to be remembered. So that's why I kept chugging.
Yeah.
Next is Peter Letcher. 18-year-old Peter had just had his heart broken in November 1987 because he had traveled to Sydney to propose to his girlfriend, who was just 15 years old, and she declined, saying she was too young to get married.
Fair.
He was only 18, so like it's...
I mean, chill, dude.
Yeah.
You got a few more years before that's even legal, I guess. I don't know what else his laws were back then.
Yeah, but it was so sad. And after the failed proposal, he left Sydney to hitchhike back to his parents' home in Bathurst. And he was last seen on November 13th leaving Sydney, but he never made it home. He remained missing for 2 months until on January 21st, 1988, Peter's body was found on a woodland track near the Jenolan Caves. And the Jenolan Caves are a popular tourist destination, and they're actually not far from Belongalo at all. Peter was found buried in a shallow grave covered in leaves and branches. He had been handcuffed and shot 5 times in the head with a .22 caliber gun.
Sounds familiar.
Also been stabbed in the back several times. Also similar. Malat's
very
victims.
Similar. Yeah.
Now, other than this similar MO, why Malat has been connected to Peter has to do a little bit with his ex-wife. So Ivan Malat was married to a woman named Karen Duck. And they were married for about 3 years. And in early 1987, they were still married. And he took her to see the Jenolan State Forest because he had been working in the area. So it is confirmed that he was in that area in early 1987. And Karen left Malat later that year. And after she did, Peter's murder took place in that same area.
So he was familiar with the area, which could... I mean, it's a huge coincidence, but still, I mean, it seems like a viable option.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, he was also known to be working for the Department of Main Roads as a surface sprayer near Jenolan at the time. Clive Small, who is the NSW police assistant commissioner who led the investigation into Malat and his capture, says that Peter is the one victim who he is sure met his fate at the hands of Ivan Malat.
Yeah, I mean, based on the manner in which he was killed, I mean, I would get behind him on that.
Yeah, same. I honestly, like, fully, thoroughly believe Malat is responsible for Peter's death, because, like you said, he was shot with a .22 caliber, he was stabbed in the back, and he was buried in a shallow grave covered in leaves and branches, which is all similar to other victims of his.
Right.
Small said, quote, "There was a pattern to Ivan's killings that had to do with his personal circumstances. When he killed, he was by himself, or he wasn't in full control of his relationship, or it was falling apart, or it had ended. With Ivan, it was all about control. And when Peter was murdered, he had broken up with his partner.
Yeah.
Which is not true. Technically, Karen left him, but
right.
He had, you know, was no longer with Karen.
Yeah.
The other murders that have been attributed to Ivan don't fit the pattern. So he's saying, like, that's why he's sure that this is the one for sure that was connected to him.
Yeah.
Additionally, as with Karen's murder, there was signs that the killer enjoyed some time at the crime scene before leaving. There was an empty whiskey bottle left near Peter's body. Technically, Peter Letcher's murder has never been solved, but most people believe he was a victim of Ivan Milat, and I definitely do.
Yeah.
The third case is the most definitively connected to Milat is the murder of Diane Pinocchio. 29-year-old Diane was staying at the Lake George Hotel in Bungendore on September 6, 1991. And this just like really shattered me because her husband, Carmen, had decided to give her a break night off with her friends that night. So that's why she was like out.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So that evening, she was out with friends and Diane called Carmen from the Kangaroo Club in Queanbeyan to tell him that she was going to the Lake George Hotel in nearby Bungendore because the hotel was run by her brother and she wanted to go visit. So she arrived at the hotel, she called Carmen, and she said that she'd be home later that night. At around 11 p.m., she left the motel to head towards the King's Highway to make her way back home, but she never arrived home. And not only was Diane married, but she also had a 2-year-old son, so they knew that she wasn't missing on her own accord.
Yeah, and she was driving, like she left the hotel. Okay.
Her husband, Carmen, would later say that Diane was always overly generous, saying, quote, her biggest problem is she would do anything for anybody. So they were hopeful at first that she just got lost or got off track a bit. And Carmen would later say that he believed that if Diane had hitchhiked, it would have been for the first time, but that if someone walked up and needed a hand, she wouldn't think twice.
Yeah.
Searches for Diane took place as her family was sure that she didn't just leave. And unfortunately, 2 months later, her body was found. On November 13th, 1991, two employees of the Forestry Commission at the Talaganda State Forest, which is about 120 miles south of Bolangolo, discovered a decomposing body wrapped in pine branches in a shallow grave. Diane had been stabbed to death. And one of the wounds to her spine would have paralyzed her, just like several of Milat's other victims.
Yeah. It's weird, too, that all these people that you've just mentioned, they were all found like 2 to 3 months after they went missing. I don't know. That's just weird to me. It's like all of a sudden, 2 months later, their bodies are found.
Their bodies are found. Yeah, that is weird.
It's a huge coincidence, but
yeah,
still weird.
Other similarities between Diane and Milat's victims include a beer bottle and beer can found at her crime scene and the way that she was buried under leaves. We know from employment records that Milat was only working until 2:30 p.m. on September 6th, so he would have been off work at the time that she was abducted. And he had the next 2 days off work. Her murder also fit into the timeline of his other known murders. She was killed after the January 1991 murder of Simone and 2 months before the murders of Gabor and Anja in December 1991. And it does, to me, if she is one of Milat's victims, it kind of seems like this was a crime of opportunity because at this point, he was disposing of bodies in Bolangolo consistently. Right. But her being in a different state forest, it kind of makes sense because if it was just a crime of opportunity, he just had to kind of do things more on the whim instead of it being like his typical routine. Diane's son, Jack, who was only 2 years old when his mom was murdered, was hopeful that before Milat died, he would confess to Diane's murder. But unfortunately, as we know, that never came. But just like as with Peter, Clive Small, the detective who ran the investigation, also considers Diane a likely victim of Ivan Milat. Now, Ivan Milat has also been identified as a person of interest in 3 unsolved disappearances of young women in the Hunter region, which is southwest of Newcastle and northwest of Sydney. And there are actually 6 cases that were initially believed to be the work of another serial killer, but Milat is a person of interest in 3 of them. So we're going to go through those 3 first, then we'll go through the other 3. But these all happened in the Hunter region. And like I said, some speculate that there was a different serial killer operating in that region that was responsible for these. But Milat is also a possibility.
Yeah.
20-year-old Leanne Goodall was traveling to Newcastle in December 1978 after seeing her mother in Sydney for Christmas. She told her parents that she was planning to go to the city, but instead she ended up going to Muswellbrook to visit her brother Warren. On December 30th, Warren dropped her off at the Muswellbrook railway station, and she told him that she was going to spend the night with their mother before traveling to Sydney to celebrate the New Year. She also said that she was planning to stay in Sydney for a few weeks. So Warren saw Leanne board the train at 1 p.m. and then at 3:30 p.m. she was seen at the Star Hotel in Newcastle, but that was the last time she was seen. Leanne was supposed to be starting a course at Newcastle Technical College in February 1979, but she never showed up. Her mother and brother hadn't realized she was missing because her mother thought, well, they both thought that she was visiting friends in Sydney, and this is 1978. Right. There's not cell phones where you're texting all the time. Like,
yeah,
friends in Sydney. There's not a big deal.
Yeah, so they didn't hear from her in a few days.
Yeah. But in late January, Warren visited their mother and asked how Leanne's stay was. Like, oh, how was it when Leanne stopped by before she went to Sydney? And that's when they realized that Leanne had never made it there on the 30th. They contacted Leanne's friends, but learned that she had never made it to Sydney. And then shortly after that, she never showed up for her class. And so when they contacted the police at first, they said, oh, Leanne, she'll come back. Don't worry. She's not missing. Unfortunately, no sign of Leanne was ever seen again. And her case quickly went cold. And Leanne is currently still classified as endangered missing. Now, Milat was known to frequent the Star Hotel, which is the hotel that she was seen at after getting on the train. And he was also working in the Newcastle area in late 1978 and early 1979. Other than that, though, there are no obvious connections because she's never been found. So we don't, you know, there's no cause of death. There's no how she was buried. None of that. It's more just Milat was in the area.
Yeah.
4 months after Leanne's disappearance, 18-year-old Robin Hickey was traveling to the Belmont Hotel to meet a friend. She was last seen at a bus stop on Pacific Highway at Belmont North, just across from her home on April 7th, 1979. It's unclear if she made it to the hotel or not, but a witness said that they saw Milat at the Belmont Hotel the night before Robin disappeared. Unfortunately, Robin was never seen again, and while the police did briefly investigate her disappearance, they ended up closing the investigation, assuming that she left on her own accord. That would change years and years later, but first, you need to know about 14-year-old Amanda Robinson, who disappeared less than 2 weeks later when returning home after a high school dance.
Oh.
On the evening of April 21st, 1979, Amanda got off the bus in Swansea and was last seen walking along Lake Road towards her home, but she never made it home. Despite a search for her and an investigation into her disappearance, though, her case went cold. And her case has long been connected to Robin's case, like their two have been kind of connected as whether it's Milat or someone else, the same killer. And then in April 2019, the NSW government and police force announced 2 $1 million rewards for information about the disappearances and suspected murders of Robin and Amanda.
I'll tell you what, Australia, y'all do the damn thing when it comes to rewards to get information, because That is insane.
Yeah. And we've seen that before. Like, they care about their people.
Time and time again. I mean, every case we've covered, I feel like, that was Australian, they've done this for.
Yeah. So in April 2019, which was 40 years after the two girls disappeared, a task force called Strike Force Arapaima was developed to re-examine the investigation into the now cold cases. From the NSW Police, quote, Minister for Police and Emergency Services David Elliott said the increased rewards demonstrates how strongly the NSW government is supporting the Lake Macquarie Police District investigators, which was like the local government investigating the crimes initially.
Right.
Elliott said, for far too long, Robin and Amanda's families have lived with the pain of losing a child, but without any idea of how it happened or who is responsible. They have been in limbo for four decades, not knowing. They deserve answers now, and we believe that offering these new rewards should be sufficient incentive for those with information to come forward. If your conscience won't make you act, maybe $2 million will.
Yeah.
So, these cases have been suspected to be connected to Ivan Milat, but in January of this year, 2024, another man was actually arrested in connection with Robin and Amanda's disappearances and believed deaths.
What?
So, thanks to Strike Force Arapaima, a man named Warren McCorriston was arrested and charged with forcible abduction and assault causing bodily harm. So, he wasn't arrested for like kidnapping or murder because they've never been found, but he was arrested for those two crimes, and he was also named a suspect in Robin and Amanda's deaths. As of when this is being recorded, April 2024, he has not entered a plea on the charges, and he's not been charged for murder or anything, so like technically he's not directly charged. Yeah. And he's not entered a plea, so we don't know if he's trying to say he didn't do it or if he has an alibi. We don't know. And he's next expected in court in May. So,
and they're not giving up any information how they linked him to the... Damn, I hate that.
No, but like, they have
not. I know why.
Yeah, you know, it's to protect the integrity of the investigation. It makes sense, but hopefully we'll know more when he next goes to court in May.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not definitive, but honestly, to me, it seems more likely than Ivan Milat, just because, like, they clearly have something that they arrested him on. And,
not
you
enough,
know, they probably...
because they're not charging him with murder or kidnapping.
Yeah, but also that's hard to get those charges when they've literally never been found.
True.
So... that seems more likely to me, but Milat has still been named a person of interest in Leanne, Robin, and Amanda's cases. And when he was still alive, he was questioned about those cases, but he remained adamant that he never picked up hitchhikers in the Hunter region. He would tell the court, quote, I had nothing to do with whatever happened to their children. I can look at them right in the eye and say, I had absolutely nothing to do with your children going missing. So he was, like, very adamant that he didn't do this.
Interesting.
But he was also adamant he didn't do the murders he was convicted of, so.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you don't want to get in trouble and go to prison for longer or period or, you know.
Yeah, which is just ridiculous because he was already sentenced to life in prison, but he was so arrogant and cocky and wanting to be in control that he never admitted.
Yeah.
Now, Milat was never officially connected to these cases and, again, never admitted any involvement in them, but because he was working in the area and the victim descriptions match his other victims, he is still considered a possible suspect by many. Ivan Milat did have links to the Hunter region, though, despite his insistence that he never abducted anybody from there. And he, quote, boasted to a friend that there were graves and corpse pits scattered across the area.
Ew, corpse pits?
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
So there are three more on top of those three that we just talked about from the Hunter region that are believed to possibly have a connection to Malat or to another serial killer that might have been operating in the area. So first is 16-year-old Amanda Zales, who disappeared on October 12th, 1979. She was last seen around 6:30 p.m. when a neighbor walked her to a bus stop in Hamilton as she was headed to a Christian coffee shop in Newcastle. Amanda called her father at 10:15 p.m. that night, saying that she needed to come home and get clothing because she was going to visit Queensland, but she never arrived back home. She seemingly vanished into thin air, and she has never been seen or heard from again. 18-year-old Annette Briffa was hitchhiking on the Pacific Highway in northern Sydney on January 10th, 1980, when she disappeared. She was last seen on the highway entering an orange Mazda sedan or a similar vehicle, but since then, she has never been seen or heard from again. In 2005, it was officially ruled that she was likely abducted and murdered. And while she may be linked to Ivan Milat, there are also two other possibilities as well. Annette's brother told police that their uncle owned an orange Ford Escort, which was similar to the description of the car she was seen getting into. And not long after Annette disappeared, the uncle dumped his car.
Oh. Well,
that's just suspicious.
Yeah, very much so.
Another possibility is one of the last people who saw her, who has never been named, but he was out drinking with her, and not long after Annette's disappearance, that man was convicted of murdering his wife.
Wow.
So again, a possibility, but neither of these suspects have been charged, and Annette's case remains classified as an abduction with foul play suspected. The final victim from the Hunter region is 22-year-old Susan Eisenhood. Susan was dropped off by her brother near the Stag and Hunter Hotel in Newcastle in 1986, and she is believed to have been hitchhiking to Taree when she just disappeared. Her skeletal remains were later found in the Kewarock State Forest, and while she had been murdered, her case quickly went cold. Now, the main reason Milat is suspected in her case is because his employment records show that he was repairing sections of the Pacific Highway near Taree and was staying at a hotel in the town of Taree around the same time that Susan was killed. But again, none of these have officially been connected to Milat. He never confessed, right. And, you know, we're probably never going to know. The final potential Milat victim that I'm going to talk about in a little bit more depth is Narelle Cox. On July 20th, 1977, 21-year-old Narelle was visiting an old friend in Noosa, Queensland when she disappeared. When Narelle did not return home when she expected, her mother sent a telegram to find out when she'd be back, but the friend responded that she had never made it to Noosa.
Oh, gosh.
She was reported missing, but was never seen again. Her family later found out that she was seen by a truck driver in the Brunswick Heads area of New South Wales, which was an area that Milat often worked in. In 1994, over 15 years later and no closer to answers, Narelle's sister Karen saw reports about Ivan Milat being arrested for murders of hitchhikers in New South Wales, and she called the task force to mention her sister's case and the similarities.
Oh.
Task Force Air, she said she didn't expect them to call back, but they called her back in 10 minutes.
Wow.
And they did investigate Milat's involvement, but Karen said, quote, they did a check on the dates and didn't think it was him as he was signed into work at a particular place and time, and they left it at that. So technically, Milat was ruled out as a suspect in Narelle's disappearance, but her family does not believe that he should have been ruled out so quickly. There are possibilities that Milat had somebody sign in to work for him, but also we don't know the exact time that Narelle disappeared.
Yeah, like how? So unless he was working
nonstop for,
yeah,
like several days, like which he obviously wasn't.
No,
I understand their frustration that he was ruled out so quickly.
Yeah,
Narelle's best friend Sue Cantle also pointed out that Narelle was placed in northern New South Wales, where Malat was working at the time, by that truck driver. So just because he was working doesn't mean he couldn't have done something like this.
Yeah.
Karen and her family did everything they could to find Narelle. Karen told the Daily Examiner that they drove from their hometown to Brisbane looking for information about Narelle that could help find her. Karen said, quote, "We called into every nook and cranny along the way. We had photos and were asking people whether they had seen her. When we got to Brisbane, we went to a police station, but they never knew anything about it. They had never heard of Narelle. They had never been notified."
Wow. Damn. What a slap in the face to their family.
I know. Like, they're doing all the legwork, everything that they can to find her, and they get there and they're like, who?
Oh my god. Because they assume she ran away, probably.
Honestly, probably. And they just assume that she is never going to be found because her case has been cold for years. And unfortunately, if Malat was the person who abducted Narelle Cox, her family will likely never have definitive answers.
Yeah.
But they, like many others, are hopeful that one day they will know the truth. There are at least 21 other victims that have been named by the media as possible suspects of Ivan Milat. Some who were hitchhiking, some who simply disappeared. Again, none of these victims have ever been definitively connected to Milat, but I do want to quickly share their names and the details of their disappearance because while there's no definitive link, they could still potentially be victims.
And they are still missing or murdered.
Yeah. They all don't have answers. Their families all don't have answers.
Yeah.
18-year-old Anita Cunningham and 19-year-old Robin Hoynville Bartram were hitchhiking to Queensland in July 1972 when they disappeared. Robin was later found shot to death with a .22 caliber gun. And Anita's remains have never been found. Ugh. 18-year-old Gabrielle Jonke and 16-year-old Michelle Riley were hitchhiking to the Gold Coast in October 1973 when they disappeared. And both of their bodies were later found in shallow graves under branches. 21-year-old Lydia Knotts left a friend's house in Queensland in October 1976 and was never seen again. 22-year-old Barbara Carol Brown disappeared after leaving Melbourne to hitchhike to Queensland in May 1978. 20-year-old Stephen Lapthorne and 18-year-old Michelle Pope were traveling by car to Berara when they disappeared. Michelle's car also has never been found. 22-year-old Alan Martin Fox and 17-year-old Anaki Adrianson disappeared when hitchhiking to Kempsey in January 1979. In July 1979, 15-year-old Tommy Mari Kavanaugh and 16-year-old Kay Doherty disappeared after heading to a disco in Wollongong. 17-year-old Kim Cherry Tear disappeared in East Melbourne with her border collie in September 1979 while she was hitchhiking to Adelaide. In February 1980, 17-year-old Elaine Johnson and 18-year-old Carrie Ann Joel were hitchhiking to Wyong, and Malat is the prime suspect in their disappearance since work records show that he was employed in the area at the time. In June 1980, Deborah Balkin and Jillian Jameson were seen with a man wearing a cowboy hat in a tavern in Parramatta, after which they disappeared. Malat was questioned in their case, but obviously never gave any details, and he has never been named a suspect. 20-year-old Joanne Lacey and Leslie David Toshak went missing in April 1981 after hitchhiking to Byron Bay on a surfing trip. On March 10th, 1991, 22-year-old Carmen Verheiden was seen hitchhiking on the Hume Highway near Liverpool when she disappeared. And finally, 14-year-old Melanie Merrill Sutton and 16-year-old Chad Everett Sutton left for school in Queensland on November 1992 when they decided to hitchhike to Perth to find their father. And it is believed they passed through the Belongalo State Forest, but no. They disappeared and were never seen again. There are a lot of cases that don't have answers and have the potential to be connected to Ivan Milat. And I truly believe that at least some of these were connected to him. Definitely some of the ones that we talked about kind of earlier in the episode, but some of these later right. ones, there's a possibility that they were connected to him. And
yeah,
who knows if there will ever be answers. And there's also a possibility that there are many, many more that we don't know about.
Never been linked. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, but he did not just commit 7 murders between 1989 and 1992.
Yeah, I don't believe that either. I think at the very least, there was an escalation period where mm-hmm. he had victims, even if he wasn't murdering them yet. But I definitely yeah. think that he has murdered more people prior to the 80s and 90s just because of his age. I mean, yeah. simply just because of his age.
Yeah, there's no way that he just started killing at 45 after having a criminal history that went back to him being 13 years old.
Right. If we were dealing with like a brain injury or, you know, some traumatic event or something that happened later in life that caused him to snap right. or something, maybe. But no, he had
no.
a long history of criminal activity. So,
yeah, he definitely has other victims out there.
Yeah.
Before we end this final episode on Ivan Milat, we need to talk about his great nephew.
Yay.
Matthew Milat, who was born Matthew Muehlmann, was only a toddler when Ivan Milat was caught and convicted for the 7 horrific murders. Ivan Milat was his great uncle, so Matthew's mother was the daughter of one of Ivan's siblings. Matthew believed that his great uncle was guilty of the murders, unlike a lot of the Milat family.
Okay.
But instead of being appalled by Ivan like Boris Milat was, he was intrigued. He looked up to him, and a friend would later say that Matthew bragged about his great uncle.
Yeah, I mean, he changed his last name, right?
Yep. When he was 14 years old in 2007, Matthew changed his name to Matthew Milat, taking his mother's maiden name.
Sick.
And then just 3 years later, he quite literally walked in his uncle's footsteps when he committed a murder.
No.
In November 2010, 17-year-old Matthew and his friend Cohen Klein invited a friend of theirs named David Ostrolone out to celebrate his birthday. They claimed that they were going to get together, hang out, and smoke weed, but instead, they did the unthinkable. They took David to the Belongalo State Forest, where they bound, tortured, and murdered him with a double-sided axe.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What?
Matthew was the main aggressor while Cohen recorded the whole thing on his phone. The next day, David was found buried in a shallow grave beside a dirt road a kilometer from the Hume Highway. Thankfully, it did not take long for investigators to suspect Matthew Milat, and they ended up finding that recording, and there was no getting out of that.
Wow.
Matthew was arrested for the murder, and in 2012, at just 19 years old, he was sentenced to 43 years in prison with a minimum of 30 before being considered for parole. He actually pleaded guilty, and the judge at his sentencing said, quote, "The guilty plea was based not on remorse, but on a recognition of the inevitable because police had seized the audio recording."
And it was like I feel like a fuck you, because he was like all obsessed with his uncle and following in his quote-unquote footsteps.
So yeah, he's like, I want to do this.
Yeah, like, fuck yeah. Exactly. I'm guilty. Look at me. I'm a badass. But really,
and
I'm
the fact that he, like, didn't get life is
so sick.
But he also might not get parole. So,
yeah, we can hope that, but you never know.
You never know. And
you never know.
This is scary because after committing the murder, Matthew said to a friend, quote, "You know me. You know my family. You know the last name Malat. I did what they do."
Ew, shut up. What they do? I know.
I know.
What do you want, sir?
I know. But unlike his great uncle, Matthew did not maintain his innocence. Like you just said, he bragged about it. And he even wrote poetry about his crime. One poem entitled "Your Last Day."
Shut up.
I know.
I hate people like that. Like, you know, obviously we hate Ivan Milat too, but like he was, for lack of better word, skilled at what he did and probably got away with it for many, many decades. And this little twerp comes in trying to be somebody that he's not and trying to put forward this facade, and it's just like pathetic, you know, like it's already pathetic to be a murderer, but like to be a fake murderer, if that makes sense, like that's just a new level of, I don't know, pathetic.
Yeah, it is. And this is, I guess, a little bit funny. When Ivan Milat was asked about Matthew, he was, quote, shocked and dismayed by the crime. Okay. So a criminologist named Amanda Howard later talked to A&E True Crime about it and said, quote, "Given Ivan Milat always claimed his innocence, he wouldn't boast about having another killer in the family." So that kind of makes sense. Where he was like, he tried to be like, "Oh, I can't believe somebody would do that." It's like, shut the fuck up.
He's probably embarrassed. He's like, God, this kid is like not even good. He just, he got caught the next day. Like, he's not, he's not my kin.
Yeah, it's absolutely sick. And so that is the case of Ivan Milat, the murders of Joanne, Caroline, Deborah, James, Simone, Anja, and Gabor, and many other suspected Milat victims. And with that, Ivan Milat is done. I am going to take a breather because I've been deep into this case for way too long and I need a break. But I wanted to cover this whole case in full depth. I wanted to share all the victims' stories. I wanted to share all the potential victims and really talk about this disgusting, inhuman monster.
Yeah. I mean, I think you did a really great job of covering every detail that needed to be shared because the victims, like we always try to, you know, push, are the most important, and they needed their own episode, even though they haven't technically been linked fully without reasonable doubt. Still,
you still never know. And there, it's almost also for the, like, unspoken, for all the other victims out there that have never even been identified as potential victims of Ivan Milat.
Yeah.
But that is all I have for you guys today. We will have a brand new episode for you next week. And until then, keep it human.